Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Play clock running down to 3. Look out. Wilson avoids a safety. And the pass up at the 29-yard line is taken in by Calvin Austin. This time the Steelers have been in Ravens territory tonight. Blocking is good up front. Pass is caught for the touchdown. Van Jefferson. And of all things, they go 98 yards after a horrendous first half. Second and 9. Jalen Warren back in. Down the sideline. Pickens makes the grab. And he goes in for the touchdown. 36 yards.
Some highlights or lowlights, depending on your perspective, from Saturday night's playoff game. The third quarter was ugly for the Ravens defense. And with that in mind, how concerned are we about the Ravens secondary heading into Buffalo Sunday evening?
Had a chance to talk to our old pal Bobby DePaul for quite some time. Late morning, early afternoon. I guess it was late morning today. He sends his love to everybody up here. He says the iguanas are bigger than ever down in Key West. Bigger iguanas than ever. And we got to chatting a little bit about this. And I would say before I spoke to Bobby D, if you would have said scale of 1 to 10, how worried am I about this development from Saturday night? I'd have probably said 6.5, 7. And after talking to Bobby D, I'd say maybe 7.5. I'd ratchet it up a little bit. They haven't really been tested a whole lot since they've made these changes. And you look at who they played down the stretch and the way the game script went in some of these games. The defense has had a lot of advantageous situations. And, I mean, even the Eagles game, the Eagles weren't really throwing the ball. They weren't.
No.
Featuring A.J. Brown. It
They've
wasn't about
trouble throwing the
pushing
ball for
it downfield. Yeah. It was about managing the game and then running Barkley all over them in the fourth quarter. The game with the Texans was over in the second quarter. They haven't really been tested. And this is going to be a major step up in caliber of opponent. And I do think it's less than ideal that they just, for 15 minutes in that game, got completely exposed by what we thought was a cooked Russ Wilson and, frankly, a cooked Pittsburgh Steelers passing game. And Pittsburgh doesn't have elite talent at the playmaker position whatsoever. I mean, you could make the case that the quarterbacks, as limited as they are held back by the skill guys. I mean, I end up getting off the phone with Bobby D, and then I spent about 90 minutes with my buddy Phil Sims, who'll be joining us today. And we started talking about all kinds of stuff. And he was saying the same things Bobby D was saying. Like, is Pat Freiermuth better than Noah Gray? Like, is the Steelers' alleged number one tight end better than the Chiefs' number two?
And they give him a contract.
I don't think he is. I think he's a guy who can win a little bit in the red zone, but he's not a super athletic, tooled-up tight end who expands your offense between the 20s. So I'm a little worried. Like, this is going to be a very different assignment than really anything they've probably seen since the second Bengals game. And we know how those Bengals games went. So, yes, I put a poll out. We'll see what the people think. I literally just put it out.
Yeah.
But I'd say scale of 1 to 10, I'm a 7.5. I did not like what I saw. And I do think these guys are going to face the likes of something they haven't seen since they switched it around, since Dean Pease got his hands on this thing, since Zach Orr reshaped it. They haven't seen something like this.
They haven't, and it's definitely a fair point, but we haven't seen guys run wide open like we saw in that third quarter since that Cincinnati game, and we've seen lesser quarterbacks torch this team. Jameis Winston had a field day on this defense when things were really in disarray. And Bo Nix earlier in the season left a lot of yardage out on the football field. But I'm not sounding the alarms from that game. Do I think that Josh Allen is going to get his? Absolutely. He's having a hell of a season, and he's an MVP candidate for a reason. But if Josh Allen had a field day on this defense, I would be very disappointed with how this group has been playing. And it's not just that they've done well in this stretch. They're the top pass defense in football since week 11. And the poll is out there, IA1057 The Fan on Twitter. It's brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Lunch deals just finished. It's served 11 to 2 every day. Can't stop in. Order Buffalo Wild Wings. Go pick it up on your way home or for your next event. Steelers put up almost 200 yards on the Ravens in the third quarter, killed them on third and long, completed six plays over 20 yards or more in the game, brought back nasty flashes of the first 10 weeks. So, Ravens flock, are you concerned at all? Very early on, just 50 votes in. Nothing to see here, 47.2%. Pretty concerned, 43.1%. I'm freaking out, man, 10.8.
So I'm torn on the question. If you were asking me, am I concerned about Brandon Stevens, I'd say that's a 10.
Yes. Yeah.
Marlon Humphrey's a first-team All-Pro, and Nate Wiggins gave up his first touchdown of the year Saturday night. So, like, Josh Allen's a stud, and I think Amari Cooper could cause a lot of problems for them. But I'm probably at a 5, and most of that is Brandon Stevens. And Brandon Stevens, I'm at DEFCON, whatever the highest point of concern is. And if he ends up on Amari Cooper on the outside, that's a huge deal for me.
Something to keep in mind in this football game, I saw this stat before we got on. Bills running backs lead the NFL in targets with 15 and receptions with 10 and yards on passes, 10 air yards this season. So James Cook or any of their back, Ty Johnson, we know him from Maryland, going down the field, that could be an issue.
Made a great catch in the back of the end zone this weekend.
Well, that way you're still making them earn it, though. I mean, if they're picking up 50-yard chunks throwing to running backs, we really got a problem.
Yeah.
Look, we're going to dig into the Bills' run game, and there will be a definite corollary to that, which is the screen game and throwing to running backs, and there are some definite... I think all three of their running backs are mismatches for this Ravens defense. But this is still uncharted territory. As great as this safety tandem has been, we saw communications last issue. This is a do-or-die situation. This is a little different than the DTR and what's-his-face trading reps.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is a little different than even, you know, Jalen Hurts in your place in a day where they really don't want to, you know, they don't want to throw the ball more than 15 times.
And it's going to be 8 degrees.
Yeah, like, this is, everything's on the line. We fought this far. We've come this far. We've turned it around. But if we play like we did in the third quarter, all that's for naught. Like, this is a different task for our Darius Washington than anything he's seen before as a starting safety. And same thing for Kyle Hamilton, who was playing way more linebacker than safety for most of his career up until 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So this is different for him. Some of these guys, Wiggins, it's your first road playoff game.
Yeah.
Like, if the Ravens lose this football game, we talked a lot about Josh Allen specifically yesterday. Like, if the Ravens lose this football game, I think it's because Josh Allen is the best football player on the field. And I think inherent in that would be him creating explosive plays with his legs and his arms. It's not just about he managed the game and then made a few plays in the red zone. No, I think it's about him finding a way to find holes in this zone, to exploit youth and experience, miscommunications, and to do the kind of things that Russell Wilson did in the third quarter.
We have a huge Hump Day Wednesday show. Ravens back on the practice field. We'll see if one Zay Flowers is out there as soon as the local media posts it on Twitter. We will let you know. Very busy show today at 3:30. We'll talk to our buddy Tim Murray from Visa and his best bets for the national championship game coming up Monday, 4 o'clock. Charles Davis, CBS analyst, does the games with Ian Eagle. Get his thoughts on the Ravens and the NFL playoffs. 4:30, the great Phil Sims joins us to talk NFL playoffs. At 5:15, Ross Tucker, he did the Ravens-Steelers game for Westwood One, also host of the Ross Tucker podcast, joins us. And Sal Capaccio from WGR, he's a sideline reporter for the Bills, joins us at 5:30.
Before we get to you, Jason, Zay Flowers not on the practice field, yeah, all the beat guys.
I think we know where that one's going. Mm-hmm. And again, in that first meeting in Baltimore in late September, was it late September?
Late September.
Yeah,
late
September 30th.
Yeah. Four total targets to Andrews, Bateman, and Zay Flowers. Not four receptions.
Mm-hmm.
Four targets. Those three men produced a total of 33 receiving yards, and the Ravens won comfortably.
By the way, Zay Flowers is the only Raven not practicing. So they're healthy. Lamar Jackson on the field. Remember, that was a question coming off getting kneed in the back. Coming up next, though, another week. Could it be another punt returner for the Baltimore Ravens? Necessary Roughness, next here on the...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan.
Every guy we've put back there, we felt like have done a really good job for us. And I think for us is we're going to continue to work through that. And Sims has done a great job. And if he's back there, we're going to count on him to continue to do the things in which we ask him to do. We put Tylen back there. He's done a good job for us. So we do have options for guys that could go be punt returners. And if you guys have seen us roll through the kick returners back there, right? We've had Keaton back there. We've had Ali back there. We've had Justice back there. You know, we've had Dez back there. So there's options for us. And I've said this before. I believe that if we take care of our business up front and our blocking game, we'll get the yards that we're supposed to get.
So that was Chris Horton last week talking about the punt return situation, alluded to the kick return situation. They really haven't had a lot of, not that they're getting a lot of the kick returns, but the problems really haven't lied there. It's the punt return. And Jason, let's take a walk back on memory lane here. Deontay Hardy was signed in the offseason, then was kind of hurt and dealing with personal issues throughout the offseason. Wasn't in camp much, but did make it in time to start the season. But then, and he didn't do anything of mm-hmm. note. He then got hurt. They went to Tylan Wallace next. Tylan Wallace, in part, helped cost them the Eagles game with some of his decisions, so they went to Desmond King.
This was my favorite era, by the way. The Desmond King era was my favorite era of Ravens return guys this year.
And he had, what, three fumbles against the Steelers?
He did have an explosive. He had a big return.
Yes.
And then he had a big return in the Steelers against the Steelers, where he fumbled it, and I think he recovered it himself.
There was like one that went 15 bounce. Yards forward.
One went forward. One he recovered himself on the bounce, and then that stick-to-itiveness, he eventually was going to fumble one away, which he did.
Yes,
to finally lose the job.
Yes,
but he packed a lot. It's kind of like Deontay Johnson.
Yes,
he packed a lot into a little period of time.
He filled that stat sheet, Jason.
He did.
Then they went to Steven Sims, who they picked up off waivers from the Texans. The Texans waived Sims.
They kind of traded Deontay Johnson for Steven Sims on waivers.
He was the corresponding move. The Texans picked up Deontay Johnson, who they waived yesterday. The Ravens picked up Steven Sims. And Steven Sims had a weird, that first punt, like, why field that in the first place? And Harp said as much yesterday.
I don't know. Why would you field that?
And he did, and he fumbled, but fortunately he was able to grab it. And
then, even more fortunately, it was the prelude to a 95-yard touchdown.
Correct.
And how they scripted it.
Yes. And then he looked like they told him to run away from the ball the rest of the first half. So could we be seeing Deontay Hardy again on Sunday?
First of all, please, Chris Horton. And I've known him a long time, covered him as a player, great dude. Stop with that pablum. Stop. That messaging's not helping anybody. It's not helping your locker room. You're not fooling anybody. You've had an issue here all year. You've had the second worst special teams EPA across the board, not just your kicker and not just your return guys, for most of the season. And that was, again, amplified in this game. So nobody's buying what you're selling. Yeah, it's time to keep the revolving door going.
Yeah.
And if Deontay Hardy, can this guy do it? Or can Deontay Hardy and Keaton Mitchell be it? Am I asking too much?
Are you really
to say that for as long as these guys keep playing football, that
are they really going to go to Keaton Mitchell's punt returner for the first time in Buffalo in a playoff game with the winds coming off the lake? I don't know that that's... Now,
or if Hardy can't do it?
I'm guessing it's Hardy.
It's Hardy across the board.
Yeah.
He played
there before.
I'm saying Hardy is their returner.
I think
kicks,
so.
Kicks, punts, we're done with it.
Well, you can let Keaton return kicks.
He's been fine returning kicks.
Yeah, he had an explosive. There hadn't been turnovers in the kick game. I'm more concerned about the punt game.
I mean, these are the kind of thing, again, you played a team that made the playoffs last year, but hadn't played last week, but hadn't played playoff caliber football for 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
This is different. Buffalo Bills haven't lost at home all year. Buffalo Bills historically at home in the playoffs. This isn't Mike Tomlin, who's lost more playoffs than he's won, right? Now Tomlin's lost six straight. This team's accustomed to winning playoff games at home. So this kind of stuff will bite you in the ass at Orchard Park.
We've seen it bite him in the ass in the regular season. And whether that's missed field goals by Justin Tucker or Ken, you mentioned in Tylan Wallace against the Eagles, we've seen special teams bite them in the butt in multiple games this year. And yes, the Ravens ended up throttling the Steelers, but who knows? Maybe that game looks differently if the Steelers recover a muffed punt inside the Ravens' 5-yard line and you have that extremely short field.
I'll tell you this. you're a hell of a lot better off having to start that drive from your own five at home.
Sure.
Than a Sunday night at Liquored Up Buffalo. Yeah. And it will be liquored up.
Oh, yeah.
People are going through tables.
And they're saying...
Remember how loud it was when they played there the COVID year? And we're like, how can there only be like 6,000 people in that stadium? Yeah. And it actually was giving them problems.
Yeah.
One of the many things that gave them problems
and
in that playoff
game.
Super
windy that day, too.
Like, balls getting snapped over
Lamar's
head.
This has to be sorted out. This has to be behind them. They need to settle on some guys who can have a rudimentary knowledge of when to field the ball, how to field the ball, and when to actually try to bring it out. Figure it out. But this is ridiculous.
Well, this is one of the ways that you, when we come back on Monday, that if they lose, we talk about the fumbled punt, bad decision-making, fielding a ball, like the stuff that Tylan Wallace was doing, not fielding a punt when you should have caught it, and then they get to down it inside the five. That's the kind of stuff that costs you football games.
They're not good enough to beat the Buffalo Bills playing low IQ football. That's not going to fly here. It's especially not up there.
Yep.
It's not going to fly. It can't happen. And they've done a pretty good job evolving and getting better in different ways through the course of the season. That crap, especially early in a game, as much as this offense has had trouble in the playoffs early in games, you best be done with it. Figure it out.
Because I think we're in agreement here. If the Ravens play their A game and the Bills play their A game, the Ravens win the football game.
I think probably, most likely, yes.
Yeah, but if we can come up with scenarios how they lose this football game.
Well, it's beating yourselves. I mean, it's that and the penalties rear their ugly head. And Ravens did a good job of avoiding them against the Steelers.
Well, they're listening over there, so hopefully they take this to heart. It's Inside Access here on a Wednesday. Ravens on the practice field. If you're just tuning in, only absentee at practice during the media portion was Zay Flowers. Coming up next, get to the Bills. And the Bills in that running game. Can the Bills run the football on the Baltimore Ravens? We will answer the question next here on The Fan.
He's going to hand it off to Cook. Cook's got an opening. Cook fights. He's in for the touchdown. He had 16 rushing touchdowns this year to tie the franchise record. And now he's got one in the postseason.
I hear this crowd going crazy as you got them behind you guys. This time next week, you got the Ravens coming in. And I know earlier this year it didn't go the way you wanted, but what do you guys have to do to come up atop this time?
I mean, just do what we've been doing, you know, keep playing football, how we playing. Let's see how it goes.
Here's the James Cook touchdown. James Cook had 120 yards and that touchdown in the playoff game against the Broncos. They have a three-headed rushing attack, and then if you add Josh Allen to the mix, that's a four-headed rushing attack. Ray Davis in the concussion protocol currently, but expectations are he may play. And then Ty Johnson caught a touchdown pass, he had Terp, in the game against Denver. With Josh Allen and these three guys, could the Bills create problems for the Ravens on Sunday?
Look, they're a very interesting team running the football. They've got three players with over 100 rushes, so that's unusual in and of itself. Three players with at least 100 carries. They've got multiplicity. They've got a guy in James Cook who I think has risen to a level where you don't ever have to take him off the field. I think they trust him a lot in pass protection. I think he kind of came to prominence at first as more of a third down back. Now has become the feature guy. You could have him on the field in every situation, but they do have other guys in different roles. Johnson's even more of a home run hitter in the screen game. Davis, a little more thunder. So they've got a mix, and I think Joe Brady, their offensive coordinator, does a really good job of keeping them all involved and getting them in enough of a lather and not going too crazy, leaning on Cook, which I think a year ago at this time, they probably were doing a little more rudimentary, and it was a lot more running the quarterback by design and a lot more just running the offense through Cook. And I think they've evolved some since then. And look, they're 11th in the NFL in yards before contact per rush, so that's around where you want to be. They are 7th in the NFL in total rushing EPA non-quarterback. So it's not like it's just Josh Allen leading the way. And if you want to look at their total rushing EPA, including quarterback runs, True Media has them 4th in the NFL. So it is a diverse, legitimate attack. I will say this, though. their superpower, the thing they kind of lean on more than anybody else in the league, is exactly what we've seen from the Ravens lately. It's tackle eligible. They ran 124 runs this year with six offensive linemen on the field. The next closest team did it 71 times. The league average was like 40-something. So they're almost three times the league average. They ran for 607 yards this year with a sixth offensive lineman on the field. The next closest team was at 270. So this is something that they lean on. They like to have the explosiveness of the quarterback and Cook or Johnson in particular on the field with their heavy personnel. And they can get multiple at the tight end position as well.
And they got a good O-line.
Yeah, and they're bringing a sixth one in.
Yeah.
However, the Baltimore Ravens this season, when the other team has a sixth offensive lineman on the field, 20 carries for 30 yards. Now, that's not the best way to look at it because a lot of times that's being done in short yardage. Not a lot of teams do what the Bills do and use the sixth offensive lineman outside of short yardage, outside of, you know, goal-to-go type situations. However, the Baltimore Ravens on the season are number three in EPA against six offensive line runs and fourth in success rate against 6-0 line runs. And much of those numbers were compiled this season while Michael Pierce was rehabbing from injury. So they've only had him back for a few weeks. So I think when you're talking about a Brody, when you're talking about Jones and Matabike, who are guys you don't have to take off the field in heavy run situations, and you add a Pierce to that mix, and you've got a Urban in the fold, and they've played Malik Harrison, who's a run stuffer, a lot more in the second half of the season as they reconstituted their defense. I don't know that that's going to carry over for the Buffalo Bills the way it did. I don't know that that's going to be as much of a difference maker against the Ravens' defensive line as it's been against other teams this season. But I do think, because if I'm thinking this, they're thinking this, and they're thinking it at a higher level than me, James Cook hasn't had a target in the last three games. I bet James Cook has three targets on the first drive. Like, I just think that, are the Buffalo Bills going to want to run into a brick wall, or are they going to want to show some heavy personnel because they want to get all those big bodies of the Ravens on the field and then throw to the running backs, throw to the tight ends, quick hitters, RPO-type looks, the ball coming out quickly, and Josh Allen having to to make a decision, am I keeping it or am I throwing it? That's where my concern lies. Malik in coverage. Board, okay, maybe, but, I mean, how much are you going to lean on Board? And even Board against these running backs, I don't like it. And so I'm thinking back to some of the games that Buffalo played down the stretch last year where, I mean, I think they went to Arrowhead and James Cook had like eight targets in the first half of the game. Like, they've unveiled blueprints like that before against different opponents, and that's what I think we're going to come up against. I don't think that they're going to sit there and say, if we stick with six offensive linemen and keep running it and running it and running it, the levee's going to break. I think they're going to throw the ball to their running backs a lot, and it could lead to big plays.
I am interested how committed they'll be to the run. Coming off that Buffalo game where they just totally ran him over for 210 yards, and you mentioned the offensive line, they held up really well against Denver's pass rush as well, and Denver led the league in sacks, and they only gave up two sacks on that afternoon. But this Ravens rush defense, that's where it's strength on strength, where, yes, Buffalo has a top 10 rushing attack, but guys, they've faced, what, five rushing attacks in the top 10, and the levees never really broke. The most rushing yards they allowed in a game was against the Eagles. Most of that came at the end where Saquon broke off, what, a 25, 30-yard run to really put the game on ice. But they've only allowed five games this year in which teams have rushed for over 100 yards.
Jason,
that's it.
Jason, you talk about how many targets you think James Cook will get on the first drive. How much do you think Josh Allen will be running the ball early?
I don't think he'll be averse to activating his legs whatsoever. He does run a little bit more in the playoffs. I don't think traditional runs are going to be super effective against the Ravens. He's run for 46 yards or more in six of his last eight playoff games. He averages 55 rushing yards per game in the postseason. I anticipate that being a big part of this equation. And I don't know that the Bills have necessarily held things back, but like for a guy as skilled as Ty Johnson, again, it's weird to me. He'll go 3 weeks and they'll do nothing. And then he'll catch five balls for 114 yards against the Lions. Like you go back to the shootouts they've played, right? And Vegas has this, despite the wind and the cold and all that, this is what, 51.5? They've got this number high. Like if it is a high scoring game, when the Bills have played high scoring games, Johnson has tended to show up big in the playoffs. I mean, big in the box score. 5 for 114 against the Lions, 2 for 55 in the receiving game against the Rams. I think there will be more of an intent placed on that than we've seen against a lot of the teams that they've faced recently. And I think it could be very successful. Those passes between the numbers have been a problem all year, no matter what the division of labor was at the linebacker position any given week. That's still been a problem.
Hey, before we step out, I wanted to ask you this, Jason, because I lean on you for gambling stuff all the time because you're on top of this much more than I am. Are you surprised that the Ravens are still a 1-point favorite as we head through the week? The Bills, I think this incarnation of the Bills have they lost at home in a playoff game? That game that they lost was in Kansas City.
They lost last year.
Travis Kelce. Jason Kelce.
Cincinnati blew them out.
They struggled against Skylar Thompson in the snow.
So maybe I shouldn't be surprised that they're.
But they are undefeated at home this
year. They win.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Year.
They're undefeated
at
home this year.
And they're 15-5 at home in the playoffs, straight up. But in the last 20 home playoff games, but they've been sent home. Well, sent home. They've been sent to go pack their trash bags at home in their own home stadium each of the last 2 years. So, yeah, I mean, Josh Allen's 4-7 against the spread in his career in the playoffs. No, I'm not really surprised. I was surprised it swung as quickly as it did from, like, I got 1.5 points with the Ravens. I got Baltimore +1.5 over the weekend. I thought it would flip. I didn't think it would flip as quickly as it did. And then once it flipped, I didn't think it would move much. And it hasn't. But, there'll be a lot of public money that comes in much later in the weekend. And we'll see. It wouldn't shock me if it goes a little bit back in Buffalo's favor. But I like the Ravens here.
Coming up next, we've got a little Orioles in here, and the Orioles have announced their international signings today, hit the hot corner, and we discuss, did they take advantage of the fact there's some teams holding back some money because they're in the Roki Sasaki sweepstakes? It's the hot corner next here on The Fan.
Yeah, I think we're pleased that we've gotten our program off the ground, and it's been a big priority of mine since getting here at the end of 2018. I mean, kind of, famously, this was an area that the Orioles were hesitant or slow to partake in, versus the way that the rest of the league attacks that market. It's become essential. I mean, you look around the league, and it's literally a third of the league were signed as amateurs out of Venezuela and the Dominican Republic and other parts of Latin America, and arguably a bigger proportion of the star players are coming from that part of the world.
So that's Mike Elias. So a while back talking about their international program, and they did, the Orioles announced 22 signings today. They had almost $7 million in international money. They did not use any of that to sign Roki Sasaki, but they did give $1 million to a 16-year-old shortstop named Jose Luis Pena, mm-hmm. another $750,000 to an outfielder named Janisca Gomez. Mikel Burrow, a shortstop, got $500,000, and shortstop Ronald Terrio got $375,000. Anything that caught your eye, Jason, as far as their spending here?
I don't want to be unreasonable in my expectations or hopes or, in some cases, demands with my fandom in regards to this baseball team. So here's my line of thinking, and you three tell me if I'm asking for the moon and the stars, or
Ben,
if I'm being unreasonable.
He said you three.
We've known for a long time that they had as much money at their disposal to this international signing
almost seven million
anybody in the league.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty clear, even to mooks like us, that they were not in on the Sasaki thing at all from the giddy-up.
Nope.
Like, right? They've never been linked to him at all.
And now 20-some
teams have been at some point in time. They've never been.
And now they're down to three, and the Orioles aren't one of them.
So they've been preparing for not being involved in Sasaki, not even trying to get Sasaki, let alone getting Sasaki, since forever. Correct?
Correct.
So if they do have all that money at their disposal, and at least, let's say, out of 30 teams, 5 or 6, let's say 20% of the league thinks they got a chance to get him, or has thought up until this week they had a chance to get him. So those teams can't really spend all the money that they have to spend, right? Because they might be giving it all to Sasaki, right? So they're losing some of these 15, 16-year-olds. They can't come through with the money. They're saying, hey, wait another year. So there's a potential market advantage for the Orioles, who have more money to spend than just about anybody and aren't playing these Sasaki games. So is it crazy for me to think that with all these market forces going, and with them being a team that could use Sasaki as much as anybody, maybe even more than most, and with him saying market size isn't going to be a factor, he'll play mid-market, he'll play low-market if you are the right suitor, and them not being involved in that, then I expect us to look 5-6 years from now and say, oh, well, they're 20. Okay, so they didn't go after the one sure thing that was out there, but they did really, really well compared to other teams. Like, they hit some home runs. They hit a bunch of doubles. We're looking at Baltimore Orioles January 2025 signings in the year 2030 saying, oh, that's a top 100 prospect. Oh, that's a really interesting kid. Oh, remember that kid that they plucked from the Padres because they thought they were getting Sasaki till the end? Or that kid they plucked from the Dodgers once the Dodgers did get Sasaki and they had to walk away from their commitments to all these other guys?
Yeah.
Boy, that really worked out well for them.
Yes.
Am I crazy to hold them to a standard where, okay, if you're not going to do the one thing that we all thought, the best thing they could possibly do this offseason is go secure Sasaki for 5 to 7 years. If you didn't even try to do that, then am I crazy to think then you better have really done well with your big signings and on the margins in this international class?
Sure. I don't think that's unreasonable.
The only problem is,
these are lottery tickets. But
there's a sure thing. Not a lottery ticket.
Yeah, but
he's the best starter you would have right now, and you didn't even try to get him.
But they're not getting him. So, but the other guys are in exact science. But I agree, they should be going after the guys that the industry thinks.
There has been a trickle down effect.
Yes.
They have not been linked to scooping up. I mean, the Pirates got a kid who thought he was going to go to the Dodgers or the Padres. Like, it's happening, and we won't know the full effect of this until Sasaki does sign somewhere else, which I think he's got till the 16th or something like that. But when that happens, when those dominoes fall, if these guys aren't there to break anybody's fall, like they don't seem to want to break Santander's, then am I crazy to start to look at that and say, what the hell are they doing? What do they believe in?
Maybe they were whining and dining and working with him in the shadows. If they weren't, then shame on them to not even make an attempt at it. But yeah, now that we know that Sasaki absolutely isn't coming here, of course, the expectation should be you want to hit on some of these kids. And if you're looking glass half full here, MLB Pipeline, I did find it interesting, 13 of their top 30 are international kids. And we heard Mike Elias coming into this segment say, obviously, they didn't participate in that prior to him coming here. And we know when you're taking 16, 17-year-old kids, it takes a minute. But now you're starting to see more of a presence.
For what it's worth, and we won't know for years because the most money they gave out to a player was to a 16-year-old. They had almost $7 million to spend. They gave almost $3 million to four kids. And that's the Peña, Gomez, Barro, and Acosta. But again, how long will it take for us to know whether these guys are any good?
And I'm not like, I understand this process, but if they're going to completely abstain from the outlier opportunity that presented themselves and then at the same time not make any more hay than they normally would have in an international class, then I'm once again going to look at them and say, you've accomplished nothing. How can you possibly think you're smarter than the market at everything? You think you're smarter than the market at free agency, whether it's a six-year deal or a three-year deal or anything other than one-year deals. When you're competing with people who actually have won something at the major league level instead of other than baseball games in May and June and July and August, but not many in September and none in October. Like, how can you think you've got it figured out and all these other people who actually do win things that matter at the major league level are wrong? Like, how could the Dodgers, who have everything else going for them and don't need a Sasaki, go head over heels for Sasaki and you're not even in on it, and then you're going to tell me you just had a middling international signing class too?
Did they say that? I don't know. I'm being honest.
They've got rating system. It is what it is. Yeah. It's like recruiting classes.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't really know, but I haven't seen them linked in the top 25 or top 30
players.
Their
top kid was 44.
There you go.
Yeah, their top kid was 44.
So based on whatever the market's telling, because he's different than the market. He doesn't believe in the market.
You're right.
Our stuff is different than your stuff. Okay, your stuff better start being right every once in a while.
Yeah, just to clarify, Peña, 16 from Dominican Republic, he was number 42 prospect by Baseball America, number 47 from Pipeline. That's their top signing.
Now, if you didn't get Sasaki, but I'm looking at three kids in the top 25, I'd say, well, all right.
Yeah.
You were already prepared for this, and you were bracing for it. And because it's not like they just found out Sasaki was going to post 2 months ago.
No,
people have been planning for this for quite some time.
Correct.
Teams who are actually serious about winning and actually would want to get the kid have been preparing for this for a long time.
Now,
Mike Elias, he knows better.
Now they did.
They were too busy moving the left field wall around to get around to something like this.
To play devil's advocate, they gave $3 million to four kids. We'll see if they're any good. But as I said, according to the rankings, the highest ranked was 42nd. Coming up next, we get back to football. It's six-pack time. Our six biggest concerns about Buffalo this Sunday. We'll give you our list next here on The Fan.